Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Can your savings weather an economic storm? There are very few physical assets you can invest in that are proven to stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia, and Birch Gold lets you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA and physical gold that doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket. Text COAST to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Text COAST to 989898 and secure your savings today.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Carl Abrahamson is a writer, publisher, magic anthropologist, filmmaker, and photographer. Since the mid-1980s, he's been active in the international magical community, integrating what we call a culture as a way of life and lecturing about his findings and speculations. The author of Source Magic, A Culture, Resonances, and Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan, as well as editor and publisher of the annual anthology of A Culture, The Fenris Wolf. Carl, welcome back to the program. How have you been, sir?
Thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here. And I've been good. I've been a diligent little boy writing away, writing new books.
Excellent. Good for you. You do a great job writing. How'd you get started in all this?
I think it was already back in school, you know. You get these early senses of vocation, and I found that my vocation was in writing. And then, of course, what should you write about? Well, that's the game of life. You accumulate experience, and you find interesting things. You go to interesting places, and you start connecting dots, and suddenly you have your own mind frame, you know. And I was very early on interested in magic and sort of the supernatural and fantasy and myth and all these things. And I've just rolled with it, basically. And today I write about it from the sort of down-to-earth perspectives. It's not highbrow, and it's not, you know, too symbolic or too arcane. I just try to see what's magical today, in a way, and then I write about that.
Some people kind of spell magic ending in a K. You have it M-A-G-I-C as we have it here in the United States.
Yeah.
Is there really a difference?
The difference is having to do with this probably most famous or infamous magician of the 20th century, a British guy called Aleister Crowley.
Yeah.
And he spelled his magic word with a K to sort of differentiate it from the older systems that he had been taught in. You know, as kids do in a way, you know, you want to set yourself aside from whatever has been before. And some people have taken that to heart and spell it like that. I prefer the normal spelling in a way because it's more inclusive.
And what is your thoughts on occulture, O-C-C-U-L-T-U-R-E?
Yeah, it's of course, it's the title of my of a book I've written. But the thing is, it's more than a punny joining of two words, meaning occult and culture. It has to do with many things that are going on today. I argue that it's tied in with our, you know, survival instinct, because we're facing so many difficult problems as a species, and we have to deal with it somehow. And one of these things is going back in time, but also, you know, looking at whatever is going on today and historically, indigenous tribes, different ways of dealing with problems. All these things have usually been occult. They have been in the occult sphere, hidden, ostracized, perhaps even forbidden. But essentially, most of these things are just like proto-science, you know, proto-psychology, things that have not been validated yet in terms of speculative ideas and methods and stuff like that. And I believe that it's high time that we carry on taking a look at all these sort of banned and weird things to see if there's some little gem in there, some little seed that can take us into a healthier worldview and a more constructive approach. That is basically what a culture is. You know, when something goes from the occult, the hidden, underground, into the overground, into the mainstream. And that's happening a lot today in culture. So we were experiencing pretty strong occulture, and I think that's very, very healthy.
A lot of people, Carl, when they think about magic, think about people like Merlin the Magician. You don't necessarily have to be a magician to perform magic, do you?
No, there are many, you know, ways you can define it. And I think that one very good and useful description is just that, you know, if you have a will, you know, you want something, whether it's something, you know, worldly, like a promotion at work or a new partner or you know, just something in your life that will fill it with more meaning. Whatever you do to reach that goal is by definition magical. But then, of course, you have the more, you know, cosmic stardust sprinkled fairy tales and myths, and you mentioned Merlin, and we have the, you know, the Harry Potters and all of that sort of the mythical stuff. That's part of it too, because it's more integrated in our life and our culture and our history than many of us care to admit. I admit it freely, and I think it's essential that we validate both aspects, both this sort of causal process of getting what you want, but also acknowledging that there are let's call it supernatural, or at least sort of supra-rational processes that we can't explain at this moment, but nonetheless, they are true, and they fill our life with meaning.
Let's talk about your title of your latest book, Source Magic, The Origin of Art, Science, and Culture. Explain what that is.
It's basically, you know, the book is an anthology that contains essays and lectures about many things. But it dawned on me along the way when I, you know, lecturing and writing that, whoa, all of this makes sense together. And there is something, we do have a source. We cannot go back to prehistoric times when there are no documentation, not even, you know, cave paintings. But we can, based on the data that we have from archaeology and just remains, that, of course, life was incredibly tough back then. So you had to stay together, help each other, work it out, protect yourself and your friends and tribes from many, many threats. And part of this was getting information from what you can call a shamanic mindset, mind frame, basically going, traveling inside to get information, not from necessarily external gods, external forces, but rather psychological insights that certain people with a capacity for that kind of free-floating meditation, in a way, have. And then they bring it back to the tribe, and they can be useful. And everything that we have in our culture today have sort of discernible trails going back to that original shamanic mind frame, whether it's the natural sciences, whether it's culture, whether it's, you know, anything human, any human endeavor has that sense of magic to it, because it deals with speculative questions inside us. Should I do this? What if? Is this correct? Mm-hmm. Constant processing, not only on rational levels, but also on irrational levels. And those are the seed that can bloom into bigger endeavors.
Carl, does the magic you talk about include candles and rituals and spells and things like that?
It can. I would argue that it's not really necessary, because what I just talked about before, that there's also this sort of causal magic going from point A to point B because it's my will. That can be fulfilling enough and may not require any, you know, paraphernalia or any adherence to any sort of school or teaching or mystical system. But it also can be useful as gimmicks, in a way, to change your mind frame in a moment of, in a way, you know, programming yourself to become more efficient, programming yourself to become more susceptible to influx that could be good for you. And all of these things that are in the traditional systems, like, you know, wands and cups and candles and stuff, they can be good mood changers, just like music can be, that you set yourself in a different mind frame in order to experience the moment in a different way than if you're just watching TV or playing a game or whatever it is. You know, sometimes we can change our inner world by changing the outer parameters. And it's true the other way around also. And in doing that, we can become more efficient in dealing with whatever it is that we want to achieve.
When we deal with magic, are we tapping into sources? What creates the magic?
Oh, what a good question. I think that there's a general dilemma or dichotomy, you know, basically having to do with external forces or internal forces. When I was younger, very immersed in the mythology of magic, I would say that, oh, there this angel or this force or this whatever natural force helped me. But as things have progressed and I've grown more mature in a way, I believe more and more in the psychology. There's great power in the human mind. As they said in the 60s, you know, it's all in the mind. And I do believe that. I do believe that whatever we find in the inner that can help us bring things out to make our lives more meaningful, it's all inside us. It's psychological processes, emotional processes, and we have to learn and accept actually how easy it is to go inside and you know, have a conversation with yourself basically, and find new things that are not there if you're a kind of a slave to rational thinking. If you discard immediately like emotional stuff, or if you discard intuitive directions. It's about being open-minded, basically.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Can your savings weather an economic storm? Think about what you've put away for the future. Inflation can render cash worthless. Real estate can crash like in 2008. Economies built on a mountain of debt can fall like a house of cards. And there are very few physical assets you can invest in that can stand the test of time. Gold has withstood as a valued form of money for millennia. It's why people are flocking to it now and why Birch Gold is busier than ever. Through a little-known tax loophole, Birch Gold can let you convert a retirement account into a tax-sheltered IRA and physical gold, and the best part, it doesn't cost you a penny out of pocket to make that change. To learn more, text COAST to 989898 and claim your free info kit on gold. Let me ask you this again. Can your IRA or 401k weather an economic storm? If not, call the people I trust, Birch Gold. Text COAST to 989898 and secure your savings today.
Hey girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, you wrote a book a year ago called Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan. He kind of performed dark magic, didn't he?
Well, I would say in the sense that a lot of it was for selfish purposes. He didn't believe in the fluff. He believed that the greatest altruism was being good to yourself first, then you can be good to others. And there's a big difference there in sort of instead of discarding yourself or whatever you want for the sake of others. It can be nice and, you know, altruistic, but you will feel better if you put yourself first. Then you can help other people. That's one aspect that some people may find dark. And, of course, he had the symbol of Satan. He didn't believe in any sort of real human-like Satan figure, but it was a symbol that appealed to him because he wanted to stir, you know, the general American mind frame of the 1960s by having this controversial symbol. And it helped him to achieve his goals. So in that sense, dark, but he was certainly not like a generally like evil person. He was a friend of mine, and he was a very, you know, funny, intelligent, generous man. And if you look at his writings, it's basically taking all of the old magic to a new level. He's bringing it into our contemporary times and mind frames. And he, you know, it's part of what I would call the source magic, acknowledging that a lot of it is psychology, but psychology on an individual level can be helped by having these external, I'm not going to say trappings, but these external gimmicks and gadgets and things that will change your mind frame in the moment of ritual. It's not dark. It's just applied psychology with some added bonuses of changing the atmosphere in the, you know, space where you're doing this. And it works. People have been doing it. Humans have been doing it for since the dawn of time, basically.
Would you say LaVey was evil?
No, I would not. You know, to be evil, you have to be unbalanced. You have to have, you know, bear a grudge that becomes obsessive and takes over any constructive dealings in life and, you know, destroys your own happiness. And he certainly wasn't that. He was self-indulgent, immersing himself in his own pleasures. It's a very pleasure-oriented philosophy that he constructed, and then he had this sort of dark symbols. But it's mainly again because he felt attracted to it, and then other people have felt attracted to them also. But there's nothing inherently evil in that. Evil is imbalance. Evil is when you go against yourself. That's the ultimate evil.
Carl, what is magico anthropology?
It's something that I came up with, and I'm sure others have done it also, but I've really become obsessed with the term and the phenomenon. Magical anthropology is the study of how humans in all times, spaces, cultures have related to the phenomenon of magic, both on inner levels and also on outer cultural levels. You know, to what extent does one culture, for instance, permit ritual and magic to be out in the open? I mean, we know some societies have banned it, like medieval times. Yet at the same time, what the magicians were dealing with that time is now our science. So it's almost like magic is ahead of the curve. And magical anthropology looks at that and tries to figure out, you know, is there a correlation between a good, open, like liberal society and the presence of magic? Of course, individual, strong, powerful magicians who have left cultural traces. Again, in medieval times, there were many of those who became, I don't know, scapegoats. They became victims of their own conviction that this is the right path to go. So magical anthropology is basically the study of the human beings on individual levels and on cultural levels, relationship to magic as a phenomenon.
How many people who practice magic, Carl, got questioned as being witches, for example, by mistake?
Well, right. Yeah, you know, it's an incredibly, I would, if I have that hat on, so to speak, I would argue that everyone is performing magic. That's part of my realization or my deduction, in a way, that we are so connected to magic and magical thinking that everyone does it. But if you mean flamboyantly acting with the paraphernalia and dressing up in a different way and stuff like that, I would again say it's not the majority, but there are certainly more people doing that than the critics would care to admit. And I would say one part of your culture has been, for instance, the integration of fraternal societies like Freemasons, for instance. It's, you know, very, very widespread. It became integrated in culture in the Western world and also in other places. And there you have all of these things, ritual initiations, dressing up in a different way, receiving material to study, etc., etc. That is no longer hocus pocus. It's part of whatever it is that we want to achieve and how we want to achieve it. The same thing with yoga. Yoga used to be hocus pocus in the 1960s. If you were the Beatles and you could afford it, you could go to an ashram in India, and it was sort of hokey and hocus pocus. Today, however, almost every housewife, you know, goes to yoga or does yoga at home every day. It has been, you know, gone from the occult into the culture and also into the mainstream. That's just how it works. It's like seed. Seed grow underground, but, you know, with right nutrition, it will grow upwards towards the sun, above ground, and bloom into a beautiful plant or flower.
Can magic be used in all kinds of ways, good and evil?
I would say so. I would say so. And for instance, an evil application would be dogma, you know, dogmatic propaganda, trying to make people go against their own will, just like violence is that in its most crude form. It could also be done with propaganda, presenting a narrative that you feel as an individual human is immoral, is not right. And yet the force of the critical mass point, safety in numbers, etc., that has been pushed upon a mass of people is evil, I would say, because it destroys the natural balance, it destroys the natural stratification of the individual making individual choices in life. Whatever goes against that kind of freedom, to me, is inherently evil.
Have you ever seen anybody who practiced magic and they were just so phenomenal at it? Strange things happened?
Yeah, I have. But then you have to sort of take it to, can this, you know, be verified by objective means or in an empirical, clinical thing? I think in some ways it can. I mean, there's been very interesting experiments since a couple of decades, you know, measuring electricity in the brain during meditation, for instance, and doing agitated things that we call ecstasy, you know, whether it's like a sexual sense or it's just exhaustion, basically measuring these rare mental states, these mind state frames, and seeing what are the physical things going on here. So that's a very healthy thing also. However, if you see and say that someone, that person was so magical, that movie was so magical, or this magician did this and it was incredible and magical, it sort of sticks in a very subjective interpretation point of view that it can be hard to validate. But on the other hand, not everything needs to be validated, because if that experience and that magician was magical to you, then so be it. If that fills your life and experience with meaning, it's perfect. You know, everything doesn't need to be clinically dissected in order to make sense.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, The Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi guys, Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.